Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest forms of cancer known. The disease is hard to detect and is usually found when it has progressed too far to be cured. But researchers are using new technology that might prevent some people from developing the disease. The pancreas is an important organ that produces insulin. Insulin is a hormone that controls the body's blood sugar. The pancreas, however, is hard to see. It is at the back of the abdomen and is covered by the stomach and the liver. That is why doctors have a hard time identifying early tumors during normal physical examinations. Dr. Somashekhar Krishna says that is why only 9% of patients diagnosed with pancreatic cancer are alive 5 years after doctors find the disease. Krishna is an endocrinologist, a person who studies hormones and the organs that produce them. The cancer doesn't produce any symptoms early on, he said. Patricia Beatty went to the hospital with what she thought was a stomach virus. However, during a scan of her stomach, the doctor found a cyst. He told me that the cyst was there and that it was precancerous, Beatty said. Pancreatic cancer can develop in one of two ways. The disease starts either as a cancerous tumor or it starts when a cyst becomes cancerous. The difference between a tumor and a cyst is that a tumor is solid, while a cyst is filled with fluid. Cysts on the pancreas are common. Most are not cancerous. Doctors can test fluid from inside the cyst, but it is hard to tell which cysts will develop into cancer. Cancerous tumors or cysts can be identified with special imaging tools. But imaging is so costly that it cannot be used as a usual testing device. Krishna led a study of a new device that gives doctors a microscopic look at cysts at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. Krishna says his study showed that the new device is highly accurate. We can diagnose cysts with the accuracy of 96% to 97%, he said. The method uses a tiny microscope with a laser light to produce a picture of the inside of the cyst. Krishna and others are training doctors across the U.S. to use this new technology so they can more accurately identify precancerous cysts. However, doctors will only use the new method after other imaging tests are ordered for another reason. That means the cancer will still grow silently in most people until it is too late to save them. Krishna told VOA that a blood test is the most sensible way to find pancreatic cancer early. But he noted that the test has not been developed yet although researchers continue to work on one.
Paris has many old buildings with lead, yet does not have rules about lead dust in public spaces. The issue has become an important concern after last spring's huge fire at Notre Dame Cathedral. The fire, in April, released thousands of kilograms of toxic lead dust into the atmosphere in just a few hours. When the Notre Dame fire happened, we didn't have any threshold for what represented dangerous lead levels outdoors, Anne Souris told the Associated Press. She is the Paris City Hall deputy mayor in charge of public health. It was a wake-up call. The amount of lead that was burned in Notre Dame was unprecedented. The Associated Press news agency has found that many countries lack rules about lead in outdoor public spaces. Other historic European capitals, such as Rome and London, do not have rules for outdoor lead dust levels. That is also the case for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the World Health Organization. Poisoning from lead dust can cause permanent loss to mental ability, seizures, coma, or death. Pregnant mothers and young children are at the greatest risk. Concerns about lead are especially strong in Paris. Lead is common in many parts of Paris's 19th century buildings, in roofs, balconies, floors, and terraces. Experts say because Paris is a highly preserved historic city, it also is a danger spot for lead. Paris is a beautifully preserved city, Souris said. But we realize we have also beautifully preserved its lead. Neil M. Donahue is a chemistry professor at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Preservation does make Paris unusual, he said. Incineration of one of the most famous roofs in the world may be especially dramatic, but there is no alchemy in this world. Lead will remain lead forever. The fire also brought attention, among officials and the public, to the dangers of lead. In June, Paris's regional health agency advised that all pregnant women and young children living near the site take a test for lead levels. The agency said 12 children in the surrounding areas tested positive for elevated lead levels in their blood since the fire. None had to be hospitalized or given medication. One child's lead exposure came from a source other than the cathedral, the lead balcony of his family's apartment. It is unlikely the child would have been tested at all had it not been for the fire. I'm John Russell.
...2019 was a big year for major space discoveries and events related to worldwide climate change. Here is a look back at some of the most popular science stories we covered in 2019. An international team of astronomers announced it had successfully captured the first image of a black hole. The picture shows the black hole having a dark center encircled by a bright orange and yellow ring spreading outward. Scientists say they produced the image from data collected from 8 radio telescopes positioned around the world. The equipment centered on the galaxy called Messier 87. It is about 55 million light years away from Earth, meaning it takes light from the galaxy 55 million years to reach our planet. The effort involved years of international research aimed at exploring the most extreme objects in the universe. NASA researchers said a spacecraft discovered the first nearby super-Earth planet that could possibly support life. A super-Earth is a planet outside our solar system with a mass that can be between 1 and 10 times that of Earth. The Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS, spacecraft was launched in 2018 to look for planets outside our solar system. TESS was designed to expand upon the work of earlier exoplanet discoveries made with telescopes. More than 3,500 new exoplanets have been discovered over the past 20 years. NASA announced that equipment aboard its Mars lander had picked up what scientists believe was the first Mars quake ever recorded. The seismic signal was measured and recorded by NASA's InSight lander, which touched down on Mars in November 2018. Scientists say the recorded activity was comparable to a 2.5-strong earthquake on our own planet. Such a small earthquake would likely not even be felt on Earth's surface. The planet Saturn was recognized as the Moon King of our solar system. U.S. scientists announced the discovery of 20 new moons around Saturn, giving it a total of 82. Jupiter used to hold the record for most moons orbiting around it, with 79. Researchers made the discovery using the powerful Subaru telescope in Hawaii. They gathered information over a period of several years. NASA teamed up with the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and international experts to study the possibility of an asteroid or other near-Earth objects hitting Earth. At a conference near Washington, D.C., scientists simulated a made-up asteroid to explore how to defend against a real-life hit. A United Nations scientific report warned that human-caused climate change is greatly reducing land quality worldwide. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned that the way humans use land is causing the Earth's atmosphere to warm faster and could harm food production. It noted that the effects of climate change have already made food more costly and less nutritious and are worsening food shortages. The report also called for urgent measures to limit carbon emissions to protect existing land and fight the amount of worldwide food waste. Scientists reported the amount of sea ice around Antarctica has decreased from a record high to a record low in only a few years. The amount of Antarctic sea ice reached a record high in 2014, but a study of data gathered by NASA showed that 3 years later, the average amount of sea ice had reached its lowest level. Experts say they are not sure exactly what caused the loss of ice. It could be a natural change or a result of rising world temperatures caused by human activity. A team of researchers working at the U.S. Department of Energy announced it had created a kind of plastic that could lead to products that are 100% recyclable. The material is a plastic polymer called polydicotonamine, or PDK. The team reports that the material can be broken down at the molecular level. It can then be built up again to form plastics of different shapes, textures, colors, and more. The researchers say this process can be repeated over and over again without the plastic material losing any performance or quality. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Rutherford Hayes was sworn into office as the 19th President of the United States in 1877. Hayes, a Republican, became president after a disputed election. Representatives of his party and the Democrats met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to let Hayes be sworn in. In return, he agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners. Steve Ember and Richard Rail tell the story of Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford Hayes was born in Ohio in 1822. He was a good student at Kenyon College and at Harvard Law School. He opened a law office in Cincinnati. When he was 30 years old, he married Lucy Webb. Later, he served as an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He also served as governor of Ohio. In this job, he helped establish the college that became Ohio State University.
Hayes was a Republican. In 1876, he was the party's compromise candidate for president. His opponent in the national election was Democrat Samuel Tilden. Tilden won more popular votes than Hayes. In the American political system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, both the Republicans and Democrats claimed the electoral votes of three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So it was not clear at first who had won the presidential election.
Congress appointed a committee to decide the issue. The committee had a Republican majority. It gave the disputed electoral votes to Hayes. He won the election by just one electoral vote. The results came just a few days before the inauguration. Democrats protested that the Republicans had stolen the election. Yet they agreed to accept Hayes as president. In exchange, Hayes and the Republicans agreed to accept Democratic Party policies on several issues. Hayes's administration would deal mainly with national, not international problems.
At first, people wondered, would President Hayes keep the promises that were made to help him win the election? Most thought he would not. Hayes surprised everyone. In his inaugural speech, he promised to put the country ahead of the party. He said, "He serves his party best who serves his country best." Party leaders told Hayes which men to appoint to his cabinet. He refused and made his own choices. He ordered federal troops to withdraw from South Carolina and Louisiana. The troops had been there since the end of the Civil War. He also helped Southern Democrats establish new governments in their states.
Republican Party leaders criticized President Hayes. Anti-slavery groups also criticized him. They said former black slaves in the South had gained a lot under Republican rule. Now, they said, these black Americans would lose everything. Hayes did not agree. He had received promises that the new Democratic state governments would protect the rights of black Americans. It was not to be. White Democrats kept political control in some southern states for many years. They often denied civil rights to black citizens. Only with the rise of the civil rights movement in the 1950s would the situation begin to change.
After becoming president, Rutherford Hayes announced that he would serve just one term. He wanted to make serious reforms in the federal government. This would be easier to do if he did not have to worry about getting reelected. Hayes started by changing the system that employed people in government jobs. Party leaders usually had great power to fill government jobs. They used the jobs to reward loyal party workers and to increase their own political strength. President Hayes demanded that federal jobs be given to people because of their abilities, not because they supported a politician.
At that time, the best jobs were with the Customs Service of the Treasury Department. The people who collected customs, taxes on imports, could keep part of the money they collected. President Hayes took action against the Customs Service office in New York City. One of the men removed from the job there was James Garfield. Garfield would later become President of the United States. Hayes also banned all federal workers from taking part in political organizations, conventions, and campaigns. And he said politicians no longer could demand campaign money from federal workers.
Rutherford Hayes showed more political strength during a nationwide railroad strike. The strike began during his first summer as president. For several years, the nation had suffered from a serious economic depression. 3 million people were out of work. Factories and businesses reduced the pay of those who still had jobs. Workers with the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad protested. They took control of many areas along the railroad. They refused to let the trains move. The strike spread to other railroads. In some places, the strikes turned into riots, and the riots became violent. Some governors ordered their state armed forces to intervene. The state forces were not strong enough, however. So the governors asked President Hayes for help. He immediately sent federal troops to troubled cities. The troops stopped the riots and ended the strikes.
Another issue during Hayes's administration involved a railroad in the western United States. It was both a labor problem and an immigration problem. Thousands of Chinese workers had been brought to America to help build the Central Pacific Railroad. After the railroad was built, many of them remained. Most settled in California. Others came from China to join them. These immigrants competed with white workers for jobs. Whites protested because the Chinese agreed to work for less money. They said this kept wages down for all workers.
The white workers asked Congress for a law to stop Chinese workers from coming to the United States. Members of Congress from both parties wanted the support of these voters, so they quickly passed a bill that made it much more difficult for Chinese citizens to come to live in the United States. The bill said the president must cancel part of a treaty between the United States and China. That part of the treaty permitted citizens of each country to settle in the other country.
President Hayes vetoed the bill. He said the United States had proposed the treaty. So, he said, the United States could not change it without agreement from China. Hayes did agree, however, that some action was necessary. So he opened negotiations with the Chinese government. He won an agreement to limit the number of Chinese who could enter the United States.
During the administrations of Andrew Johnson and Ulysses Grant, Congress had weakened many powers of the president. Congress had become the strongest of the three branches of American government. Throughout his administration, Rutherford Hayes worked hard to strengthen presidential powers. For example, the United States Constitution gives the president power to veto bills passed by Congress. In the 1800s, Congress tried to prevent presidential vetoes. It used a method of attaching riders to legislative proposals. This is how the method works.
Congress considers a bill the president believes is necessary. Then it joins that bill to a measure the president would veto if passed separately. The extra measure is called a rider to the first bill. To get the bill he wants, the president must accept the rider, too. President Hayes refused to sign any bills with riders. So the Congress, during his administration, stopped using the method. Congresses since then have used it successfully.
Rutherford Hayes kept his promise to serve only 4 years. He did not regret his decision. After leaving office in 1881, he said he was satisfied with what he had done. He looked back on his administration and wrote, "I left this country prosperous and happy. I left the party of my choice strong, victorious, and united. In serving the country, I served my party." He died in 1893.
Hayes was right in saying that the United States was strong and prosperous. The late 1800s were a time of growth for the nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.